get started. This is week 8, our last week of organization. As always, I want to start with what's on your top plate. Anything, Paul, that you would like to discuss? Suzanne, anything you'd like to discuss?
Well, you know, I wanted to tell you that we've been working through our clients and getting them scheduled, and just this bringing up the new service model with the clients strikes fascinating conversations. You know, it really shocks me how it goes right into a great conversation about referrals. You know, you after I had a client yesterday I was talking to, and she just joined. She just passed $1 million in her account this year, and we were talking, and right away she went right into saying how pleased she was, and now she said, you're adding these extra services. And I thought, wow. And so I told her, well, I'm always looking for new clients like you. And she said, wow, I'm keeping that in mind. I said, okay.
But
I'm having some good conversations, Rob. That's what I'm telling.
Yeah. Well, you planted a seed. We got to make sure that clients know that we're open for a new business of the right type, and they don't think about it. But when you plant a seed like that, and she's, you know, playing golf with a good friend of hers, and she's the friend is complaining about the service she's getting from wherever, you have planted this seed. She's more likely to say, you know, you really need to go see Paul Farrell. He does a great job. He offers monthly all the things that you're offering. So I mean, that's hugely encouraging to me that people are recognizing your value. Now I'm going to spend mm-hmm. just a second here because the best time to talk about these things is close to when they happen. Is when they keep it in mind, that's good. We want that. That's the first step. But what we're really looking for is favorable introductions. So you kind of took it where there was not much place to go beyond what you just described. But if she just said, yeah, you really need to talk to my sister, she's struggling with her relationship wherever, your response is, that's terrific. I'd love to do that. What's the best way to get in front of her? Do you see how you when the opportunity's there, you push that forward? So that's a great story. People appreciate what you do. You add value. So how did that lady who just crossed $1 million? How did you get her as a client?
Well, let me think for a second. I've had her, I think, for at least 8 or 9 years as a client. I think she found me somehow, like through a relative or through her accountant, Sandy. Yep, it was her accountant, who long since passed. She passed away years ago, but it was an old accountant that referred her to me.
Good. Well, again, I'm throwing out ideas here. You know when to apply them. She says she gives you the compliment, and you say, "What's the lady's name? The client first name?"
Jan.
Jan, I really appreciate you saying that. As you know, you came to me through a referral from whoever the late CPA was. Is there anyone else who you know who might appreciate the same things that you're whatever? Do you see what you're doing is confirming the best time to start a referral conversation is when value is given and value is recognized. This lady sees value in what you do. You have an opportunity here over time to be making sure that you're always looking for ways to start a referral conversation. That's terrific. Anything else, Paul, before I get started?
Yeah, I apologize. One more thought. When you were still practicing, how are you managing the investments? Were you using like outside firms to help you build portfolios, or were you doing that yourself, or were you doing it, you know, did you have people in the back of the house that were doing it for you? You know, how did you do that when you were still small, you know, like I am? And just out of curiosity.
Well, I have to put this in a time frame. I left production in 1984. It was at Merrill Lynch wasn't in 1984. Merrill Lynch wasn't even doing much managed money. So the strict answer to your question is that it was buying individual stocks and bonds in 84. I think the way I can answer your question better is going to when I retired from Merrill Lynch in Nashville, about 90% of our business was coming from recurring sources, managed money, mutual fund trails, so on and so forth. So that's the way that most of the money was being managed. That's how I managed the people who worked for me, is to get them into managed money. It's hard. Well, my experience from a management point of view, it's hard to provide all the service picking individual securities. I saw the job of the financial advisor as managing a relationship and farming out the investments. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but we were, the bottom line from a management point of view and a Merrill Lynch point of view is we were heavily hiring money managers and then we were managing the relationship. So did I answer your question?
Yeah, that answers the question. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Suzanne, anything you want to add or any question?
A quick question, I think. How many more calls do we have? How many more weeks?
This is week 8. We have 12 weekly calls. So
okay.
We've got 4 more after this, and then we meet monthly for another 9 months.
Okay.
All right.
Same time. I just want to put it on the calendar.
Yep. Just like we're asking you to do, having clients on the calendar, you're on for this same time. Now, when we get through the 12 weeks, then we'll look at the calendar and see what's best to set up on a monthly basis. All right?
Okay. Great.
Okay. Wanted to follow up a little bit on the organizational side. I asked you to have in front of you or having access to the October 2020 calendar. Do you have that, Suzanne?
I'm sorry. I did not see that. I printed out what I thought I saw. But I do have my October calendar here. Yes, I can pull that up.
Oh, okay. Do you have a calendar in front of you, Paul?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Here's what I want to get across on scheduling. We schedule, and I know a lot of this is going to be redundant, but it's important. We schedule 20 days a month, the first Tuesday, the third Wednesday, whatever. So as you look at the October calendar, do you see, Suzanne, that we have two days that have, like, there's 5 Thursdays and 5 Fridays. Do you see that?
Yes.
So in this calendar, you can see Paul won't have anything scheduled on the 29th and 30th because we only schedule 20 days a month. So the first time to schedule in October obviously would be October the 5th. The last day we would, that's a four Monday month. Tuesday's a four Monday month. Wednesday's a four Wednesday month. And then we have two 29th and 30th are that are free. So you can go to a calendar and look at 10 years from now and you'll know what days Paul would have free. So let's say Paul wanted to take, we can talk about later how to schedule a vacation, but if Paul wanted to take a couple of days off, you could see that the 29th and the 30th would might be good days to do it. You see that, Paul?
I see. Mm-hmm.
You see it?
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have a November calendar in front of me. Suzanne, can you pull November up, get it in front of you?
Yes.
Okay, how many free days are in November?
Okay, so it starts on the 2nd. So you have the 30th, basically. That last Monday is a free day because it's only 30 days in November.
Okay, but it's how many? So how many Mondays are there?
Five.
Okay, so you've got. I don't have it in front of me, so I just want to make sure.
The 30th is a Monday. Yes, I understand. The 30th is a Monday. It's the fifth Monday. The rest of the days of the week don't have fifth days.
Okay. All right. You got it. Okay. So as you look at your calendar, Paul, think about this. Not only do you have relatively few contacts because you've already done the segmentation on your practice, you also have two totally free days to do anything that you want to do, or if there's somebody, you know, gives you 2 days, you can prospect. Suzanne always knows that there are two free days there if you want to do something. You got a prospective client coming in or whatever. So I don't need to speak about that anymore. You all got that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out.
It is awesome. I'm throwing that in the trash can. Okay, I'm moving on. Let me just repeat the confirmation of appointments. Here's the recommended way to do it. Notify the client 1 week ahead of time. So you got Ms. Jones is the second Tuesday of the month at 10 o'clock. A week before, you send her an email. Ms. Jones, just a reminder that you have your monthly call with Paul next Tuesday at 10 o'clock. Okay? Ms. Jones says, great. Looking forward to it. But Ms. Jones might say she can't keep the appointment. I got grandkids coming in. We're traveling, whatever. So here's the process. She says, I can't keep that appointment. You say, thanks for letting me know. And then you say, this is you, Suzanne, and this part's all by email. Is there anything I can do for you or anything you want me to pass on to Paul? You got that?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
99% of the time, they're going to say, no, everything's good. If it's a non-review month, you say, terrific, we'll talk to you next month. Now, remember that that's for a non-review call. You do not schedule non-review calls. It gets into telephone, email tag, whatever. If you try to do that, now if the client would say, gosh, I really got some things I need to talk to Paul about, that's a whole different issue. You've got Paul's calendar in front of you. You know how to schedule it. All right. If it's a review, if you go through that same thing, oh, gosh, I can't keep that appointment, your response is, well, thanks for letting me know. And then you say, we've got time here, here, and here. again, you're looking at Paul's schedule. So non-review months, thank you for letting me know. Is there anything that I can do for you? Anything you want me to pass on to Paul? No, everything's good. We'll talk to you next month. It's a non-review. It's a review call. Thanks for letting me know. Paul's got time here, here, and here. Which of those work best for you? So you are you comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Now, if you want to, you can also send out an email the day before, just to give them another reminder. But that's up to you. The important thing is you let them know a week ahead of time. You don't send that email out. Just you got to give them time to get their calendar in order if need be. Any questions on that, Paul?
No. Hey, Suzanne, does that contradict with what we discussed earlier today?
Well, we were talking about a little closer that we do like 3 days before to confirm. Whatever you want to do, we can do a week. And then the agenda, would I send that the day before? And then that sort of definitely confirms the appointment because they receive that second email saying, here's the agenda for tomorrow's call with Paul.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. We teach the same thing. Rob Knapp and I teach the same thing. We come at it a little differently. There are a few minor things that we see differently, nothing core. Here's my thought on sending out the agenda ahead of time. That takes time. But once you start it, it's hard to stop it. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do it, I think it's a great idea. My thought is that if you want to get your practice up and running, you know, you got everybody scheduled, all that's going smoothly, and 6 months from now, you might want to start sending out the agenda ahead of time. I don't think there's a wrong answer, but you've got. So you really want this rollout to go smoothly. I don't want, Paul, I don't want you to have the pressure of getting out an agenda and then maybe not being able to get that done every month just because of everything, all the other things you're doing. So that's entirely up to you. What's your thought?
Maybe it's better to just do the agenda for the quarterly reviews.
Well, here,
or the semi-annual reviews, because doing an agenda every month, I don't know. You know, it seems like a lot of work.
It is, but and here's the other thing about it. I don't want them getting your agenda, and they look at it and they say, "Well, I really don't need to talk about any of this stuff." Well,
exactly.
Yeah. So. I think an agenda for your quarterly call would be fine. I mean, your reviews would be fine, but to put that pressure on you, the worst thing you can do in anything is overpromise and underdeliver. So I would not be sending out I wouldn't be sending out reviews until you've got this thing running as smoothly as you two want it to be running. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I just want to be clear.
Initially, I told her to go ahead and do it, and we kind of had a plan. But I'm worried that, you know, that Suzanne has so much to do. There's only two of us already. I don't want to bombard her with all these little details of everything she has to do every day. So, you know, I think let's... You know, for now, Suzanne, until, you know, we get that third person in the office that's just doing scheduling, you know, for now, why don't we forego the monthly agendas and just do it on I even think just do it semi-annually when we do the semi-annual reviews is fine.
Either of those makes sense to me. That doesn't mean that you don't have an agenda, Paul. I mean, you have
I know.
You have to, okay. All right. That just means you don't have to send it to them. And also, folks, there are sometimes you're going to start a conversation on a non-review call, and you're going to do what I've encouraged you to do. I've got several things I want to cover, but before, tell me, is there anything on your mind? That's going to be the last thing you're going to say, and you're going to listen for the whole rest of the time, and you're going to have opportunities for referrals and business and things that that you have time to focus on. So I'm glad we've had this conversation. So are you too clear now? It's going to be you're going to send out agendas for the semi-annual in-depth reviews. Do I got it right?
Yeah, that's fine with me. You got that, Suzanne?
Yeah.
It'll make your day a little bit easier, I think. Send out those agendas. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Now. All right. You good, Suzanne?
Yes.
Okay. Paul, you're comfortable with organization. You're comfortable with where you are from an organizational point of view. I'm comfortable. I just want to hear it from you. You're comfortable?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm
okay.
I feel comfortable, yeah.
All right. Okay. So if you're both comfortable, I want to take a little peek here at acquisition. We start acquisition formally next week. But I want to get into acquisition. Paul, I gave you the Supernova planning matrix, and I said to work on it for the next couple of weeks. Have you done any work with that yet? Putting each of your clients in one category.
Yeah, I went through and I did the whole thing. So unfortunately, though, it's at my office. But yeah, I did do the whole thing.
Did anything surprise you?
Yes.
What surprised you?
Well, I only have 11 plans, and I was surprised, you know, when I came over, you know, we were hitting in the group, you know, they were advocating doing the fee-based plans, and that's where I was focusing on, but you know, there's a lot of people within my practice that don't have that plan. And so, you know, I was talking to another advisor. I'm circling back now and I'm going to learn the software for how to do the the included plan, the planning that's included, which is foundational planning. I'm going to learn how to do those and upload them to the account so that we have some kind of planning. Even if they don't do the paid for ones, we still have a good plan that they have up to take a look at.
Well, what we talked about last time was this being the entry level plan, and then if you need to go deeper, then you talk about the other plan. When you do planning, the business you get and the referrals you get greatly outweigh the money you're going to get for doing the more expensive plan. So everybody, this is the way you get it you get it started. So when you remember, there's two things about planning that differentiate you from the competition. You always want to be able to, when you're in front of a prospective client and you talk about you've got a planning-based practice, and they say, well, I've already done one of those, you say, terrific, I'm glad. May I ask you a couple of questions? And those two questions are, how often is it revisited? And the other is, has it been fully implemented? My experience, and we used to do a lot of planning, is that the thing that gets addressed first is the balance sheet, where you can find some business to do with every intention of implementing the other things, and FAs just don't get around to it. So if you've got somebody who's done a plan, but it hasn't been fully implemented, you're immediately differentiating yourself from that prospect's current advisor. You with me on that?
I agree 100%. Yeah.
And remember what we said before, your business, your practice is defined by what, let's just guess, say you're charging 1% on your investments. If all the client is getting is investments, that account is at risk. Your practice is defined by what your clients get away from the investing side. The making sure that retirement funds are funded, plans are completed, so on and so forth. So what I would ask you to do is to keep this planning matrix somewhere where you can at any time see where you stand with your practice. What you want is as many people as possible in category one, which is a plan that's been fully implemented and has been reviewed on at least a yearly basis. Now, one other thing, I don't labor under the feeling that everybody is going to say yes to a plan. So if you've got some people out there who just won't take the time to do it, that's not good for them. But your job is to get as many people as possible up into those top two categories. All right?
I agree. Thank you.
Okay. Now, quickly, I also sent you something that says game board. I sent it last night.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I was looking at it this morning.
Okay. Here's what we're trying to do. Nobody will hold you more accountable than yourself. I'm talking to both of you. And nobody knows what the most important thing is. You know better than anyone else what needs to be done. So here's the thought. We want to measure one or two things on a weekly basis that you think are the most important things you have to get done. And this does a couple of things. It makes you prioritize. I was great about making a list of 10 things. And you know which one I always did first? Or almost always did first? The easiest one.
The easiest.
Yeah. So what I want you to do is to come up with one or two. If you get more than two, it becomes a list. And it becomes, like, not overwhelming, but it just gets bogged down. One or two things that you think are the most important things to get done over the next 5 business days. So I just made this up. And we haven't gotten into niche conversations or VIPSA conversations very deeply, but you and Suzanne sit down, whatever you all need to have a time that you meet every week, and that time is sacred. And you say, okay, Paul, you say, I've got, these are the two most important things I got to get done. I want to have 2 niche conversations, and I want to have 2 VIPSA conversations. And this could be anything you want it to be. You know what's most important to get done. Suzanne, this may be RMD, RMD time of year. You may say, I need to get 4 RMDs done. Again, I'm just making it up. So if I had, Suzanne, if I had to, and I know you haven't had any time to think about it. So if I had to, you had to put something on your game board right now. What is a task and what is that you would put on? What's something that, the most important thing to get done between now and this time next week?
I guess to follow up with the people who I've reached out to schedule like an introductory call with Paul about the new service model that just have not responded in any way.
Oh, okay. So that task would be follow up on scheduling calls, and your goal would be whatever your goal is. Now, to be on this list, it has to be doable. This isn't where you say, Paul, I want to double my business over the next 3 years. That's not where you do this. this are doable tasks, and it's got to be quantifiable. So what Suzanne just told me is, if and again, this is she didn't have time to think about it, is I want to the task would be follow up on scheduling, and the goal would be whatever the goal is. Now, here's what this does. It holds you accountable, and it also, Paul, there are a lot of things that are very important that Suzanne does that don't show up unless you really look for them. A lot of, so it, let's just say that Suzanne has, again, her task is a follow-up on scheduling, and her goal was to do four, and she does five. You got an opportunity to recognize that's a really good week. Great job, Suzanne. Terrific. And vice versa. Suzanne, if Paul is really getting some things done. So what we want you to do is, number one, prioritize. This forces you to prioritize. It's a maximum of two tasks, and it's got to be quantifiable. And if you will make yourself do this every week, you will be surprised at how much you get done. If I said to you, Paul, you and I were working together, and I said, Paul, what do you want to get done this week? I'm not your boss. We're just working together. And you say, well, I'm not sure what I'm going to get done. That's probably not the right answer as far as pushing your practice to the level you want it to be. You got it?
I agree. Yep.
Okay.
I like it.
I do too. It works. Okay. One more thing. This is homework for next week. You've got that thing. Do you have that thing in front of you? What you can learn from your best clients?
Yeah.
Okay. I would like for you to take a minimum of 10. You can do more if you want. Of your clients, and answer each of these questions for each individual client. So I asked you a minute ago about this lady who appreciated your call. And I asked you where you got her, and you thought about it, and it was from the CPA who had passed. So this is a way for you to just kind of get the juices flowing around your best clients. So let's keep that same lady in mind here. So she came to you. She was a referral, correct?
Yes.
How long has she been in your practice?
I think like 8 years.
Yeah, that's important information to have. People who are around. You know what I know about people who've been around that long in your practice is they know you. They like you, and they trust you. Those are the people who can give you referrals. She's with you for 8 years. What's the status of her planning? Can you see the five choices I've given you?
She has no plan.
Okay. The reason she doesn't have a plan is you haven't had the conversation with her. Why haven't you had the conversation with her? Because you got a lot of other things going on. And it just hasn't been a focus. Are you her only advisor?
Yes.
Number five. What's the status of her will?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let me give you a personal story about how that's important. My dad developed real estate, and he had to get some work done. So instead of going to a real estate attorney, he had to get a will. His will was out of date, and instead of going to somebody who specialized that, he went to the guy who did his real estate work. The guy didn't really understand how to do it. He was taking a long time to do it. My dad had a heart attack, died, and it never got done. Now, I tell you that story because it obviously strikes home with me, but people need to know that. the purpose of a will, if you strip everything away, is to make sure the money goes where the client wants it to go when they pass away. My son went through a divorce 5 or 6 years ago. After a year, his ex-wife was still the beneficiary of his retirement plan. He just hadn't changed it. So that's and you're going to find clients who say, you know, well, I've been thinking about that. I've just never gotten around to it. So what does that give you the opportunity to do? Refer them to somebody you know who does a great job, and we'll get into that later. So number six, how would this lady describe you to a friend?
I was kind of scratching my head. I mean, you know, I think financial advisor, but I have clients. I know they've called me. This is my broker.
Yeah. This is kind of a backward question.
I don't necessarily understand the point of it.
The point of it is,
can you explain the question?
The point of the question is, if people refer to you as a broker, that does not make you very referable. I'm really looking for there's no wrong answer here except broker.
Yeah, I can see that. I understand the difference. I just didn't understand, the relevance of the question. You understand.
Yeah.
I get it. I wanted to make sure I got it,
You got it. Yeah. What differentiates you is not your investment work. It's your service. It's your planning. And then has she given you a referral in the past 12 months?
No.
Okay. What I would like for you to do, and I'll just repeat it for clarity, is over between now and our next meeting, do this with at least 10 people, and things will start popping up that will surprise you, give you ideas for business, whatever. Got it?
Sure. Do you want me to put these in the client's folders that we keep, or do I just hold on to this and go over it with you?
The purpose of the exercise is just for things to pop out for you. It doesn't hurt to put it in your client folder, this is not something you're going to refer back to every week. It's just something for you to get the thought going on starting to bring in more business and making yourself more referable.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Anything else?
No, I'm just realizing how bad I am, though.
Oh, crime. Advisors are the worst at just flogging themselves. You've got a lot going on. We're looking forward. All right. If you don't have anything else, we'll talk next week.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay,
have
great.
A nice week.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
Talk to you later, Suzanne. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.